The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, October 17th, 2008. This is episode number 150. Yay! Skyrockets, yeah, all that good stuff. And I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today, as always, to bring you some good stuff about MotoGP. So we've got a pretty cool show today. Those of you out there that are the fans of the shorter shows will be happy. but it's still reasonably long. We got a call with Jules, and Jules and I kind of do a preview of Sepang that's coming up here this weekend. Just some general chit-chat about all sorts of different things, kind of a little all over the map. The last final finishing up of some silly season rumors and stuff, which at this point it still is. Been a little bit of a slow news week. And other than that, I really don't have a whole lot going on for this sort of front matter that we typically do. I do want to send a big shout out thank you to Darren Carpenter and Jules for doing last week's show for me, giving me a week off. Appreciate that a lot. And other than that, why don't we go ahead and get right on into the call with Jules. Hey, Jules, how you doing today?
Pretty good. I'm a little bit under the weather, so a little more nasal than normal.
Oh, you sound just like normal. So.
Great. Thanks.
But so I loved your show last week, Darren. You guys did a great job talking about the control tires, and it was good to get some fair and balanced going on in the show, because we know that we're all about not fair and balanced here at MotoGPOD. So
it's all about opinion, right?
Yeah. But no, it was a good show. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, and speaking of last week's show, how'd your date go?
Ah, thank you. It was fun. It was very nice. She's a very nice girl. So,
all right, good.
Yeah.
Well, that's too bad for the rest of them. All right, so I just want to start off with Darren and I were mentioning that little knob adjuster on the clutch side. Do you remember that?
I saw it on the feed, and I knew that he was adjusting something or other. But yeah, and then I heard your comments on the show. Yeah,
right. So you know, immediately after the show, of course, we both looked it up, and it was a brake adjustment, as Darren thought. But we got a lot of emails about it, so thanks to everybody who emailed us. Everybody was right that it is, in fact, because of the carbon brakes. You have to adjust them from time to time. The position of the help me out here.
The pad fades away so quickly that you have to get some grip. Yeah.
But the best response we got was actually from David Emmett from Kropotkin Think. So I wanted to read that because it's very, of course, he knows. I mean, he reads into this stuff very deeply, and he sent this in. He said the adjustment that you saw Rossi doing with a wheel just above his clutch is the brake adjuster. The carbon brakes eat through brake pads, and so the lever starts coming back to the bar during the race. To counteract this, there's an adjuster which closes up the brake pad somehow. It actually does this. So this is not Kropotkin, but just from other emails that I got, it does this by actually shifting the angle, also not just squeeze it, like pulling it in closer or anything like that. And that's what you see the riders adjusting on the straights. It's not too complicated, as you have to turn a wheel a couple of turns to get some fuel back in the lever. It doesn't require fine tuning. So,
right.
Thank you. And but I still find it amazing that these guys are able to do this while passing guys and going down the straight at 180 miles an hour.
I agree. And it kind of brings up, because it didn't look like Rossi was putting a lot of thought into it. It was like sort of twist, twist, twist. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's automatic.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that they do. You don't get to see it very often.
The other thing that's kind of interesting to me is when you talk about that, it's adjusting not only the depth of the pads, but sort of the angle and all of that. Well, that's kind of fun. And two, then it leads to all sorts of different other questions I have going on about exactly how carbon brakes work and all of that, which I know some of the stuff that's going on there with that. But it's still super interesting. And I'll admit, when I was watching the race and I saw it, and I knew that it had to be something like that because it was his clutch hand, I didn't immediately pick up on the brake idea. Because exactly. On the other side.
That's what threw me as well. But of right. course, it makes sense.
Yeah, because it does. It's like Darren said, you know, you're not going to screw around with your throttle hand, you know.
Because it's the throttle and the brake hand. And when you're on a GP bike, all you're doing is speeding up and slowing down. You know, you're right. not keeping a constant. You're not going to, you know, let go of the clutch hand. I mean, the throttle hand ever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's, so, yeah. And then once Darren said that, it like, oh, duh. You know, but yeah, at the time of watching the race, I was a little bit, you know, kind of like, wow, what's that? Sort of just because it didn't quite click for me that, you know, that it would be on the other side of the bike. Yeah. But yeah, cool stuff. And this is the fun thing that, that's great about MotoGPOD and watching these guys and the onboard shots, which,
I don't know. Really
they've been getting
amazing.
Some killer onboard shots lately. Yeah, yeah.
It's because they actually have so many cameras on board those bikes, and every single bike has cameras on them. I mean, did you see the Angeles crash right in front of Rossi?
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's like that kind of being able to see that kind of onboard stuff is just so cool.
Right, right. Well, once they the rule used to be that like the top so many guys had.
Right,
two
right.
cameras, yeah. And then when they went to this terrestrial camera system, they had so many more cameras to play with. And it's like, I think, if I'm not mistaken now, I think every bike has at least two and maybe three cameras on board or something along those lines. And, yeah, it is. It's awesome to see. You know, you wouldn't think that watching Rossi's foot would be all that fun, but it kind of is. You know, you see it as he's shifting and you see those sort of things and stuff, you know, of whatever. And of course, there's always the famous ass cam. They all have the ass cam, which does give you an idea of what they're doing on the bike, shifting back and forth and side to side. But it's always a little disturbing, like when you see it on the grid, you know?
Yeah.
But, no, it's good stuff. And I'm looking forward to the day when the promise of broadband and all of that comes through and we can get where we are our own director, where we can choose from several different feeds and I want to watch this, I want to watch that. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, totally, totally.
And it's there. It's going to happen sooner or later. You know, it might be a couple of years, but
yeah, basically your own little directorial control where you see all the little tiny feeds
yes,
coming through
exactly.
and saying, oh, that looks interesting. I'll go there. I'll jump to that. You
right,
know?
Right. And I'd pay money for that. I mean, the satellite companies right now have similar packages that you can do if you're like a football fan. You're watching, I don't know, like eight football games all at once or whatever. Uh-huh. And it sort of pops up and tells you when something cool is happening and you, oh, I want to watch that one. You know, that kind of thing. And, yeah, the same thing in MotoGP. That would be freaking awesome. Obviously, I understand that you know, in the United States, it's MotoGP is less of a sport than some of these others as far as popularity is concerned. But still, I you know, this will be done soon over the internet, you know, relatively soon speaking.
Well, the thing is, the funny thing is that we actually had this technology. I worked with a guy back in 99. I worked with a guy who worked for, I should remember this better, but was that Quokka or something like that? It was a company that covered Formula One races on the internet, and they had this kind of technology. This is 10 years ago. They were doing this with the networks 10 years ago. Obviously, the video was much lower quality, but they did have this option of watching multiple feeds and being able to choose which car you wanted to look at and which driver's radio you'd be quote tuned to. It was pretty amazing, and all the timing stuff and you know all that stuff was displayed. This you know it wasn't Flash, it wasn't Web 2.0 JavaScript or anything like that. It was very low tech, but it worked. It's very cool.
Well, like you say, they definitely have the technology, and the issues come down to you know bandwidth and I think. I'm sure that money gets involved and all that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
If I recall correctly, there's packages you can buy for NASCAR with the same sort of thing. You know, you get to choose which car you're riding in and all of that sort of stuff. And so, yeah, it's cool stuff. And probably, you know, the people in Europe or whatever are going to get that, you know, before we would, if we do ever. But I'd like to see it over the internet because then it's like, you know, you can make this available to anybody. It's not like you're dependent upon your country that you live in being, you know, MotoGP country or what have you. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, and, of course. Yeah. Who knows where it's going to go with all the rights?
Yeah,
I mean, like,
exactly.
You know, we're just talking about media, and they're going to get controls in somehow, because look at what happened with World Superbike stuff, where we're blocked in North America. If you have a North American IP, you will not be able to watch live races on worldsbk.com.
Right, right. And so many people sent us the BBC, the Eurosport, you know, where you can watch Eurosport or listen to Eurosport audio only, and all of those things. And those are more or less officially blocked in the United States, which right. is a... You know, and there's a ways around it, but then you have to get into all kinds of trickery and screwing around, and you know, it's you have to be a mega serious fan,
and it's illegal.
Exactly. Well, just like any of the other digital
actually,
rights.
I'm not sure if it is illegal.
I wouldn't say it's truly illegal. It's just it's a little underhanded, maybe, but like any of the other digital right management's kind of schemes and stuff like that, it only barely keeps the honest people honest. You know, for the true fan, you know, they'll find a way. And this is the same. I mean, history has shown us so many different things, like, you know, like bootleg LPs of like Led Zeppelin at, you know, such and such a venue. And you've got some guy with this crappy Walkman type recorder, and he records this live concert that, you know, really sounds like garbage. The only people who are going to really want that and really are going to find that a substitute for the professionally awesome true live album are the major fans, right? And if you
who just let them have the album anyway.
What's that?
Who have bought all those albums anyway?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And so they, you know, just I always thought the Grateful Dead sort of attitude was better, you know. Yeah, set your microphones up over here. You know? But whatever, we're totally digressing. And hopefully Dorn is listening and realizes that there are those of us out here in the United States that would be willing to pay for that, you know, to an extent, and that we do, you know, this is stuff we want.
Yeah. And I get very jealous whenever the other Jules on Round 2 posts about his motorsport weekends where he has like Formula One, MotoGP, everything live on some channel or some series of channels, actually. You can just flip through and switch whichever race he wants to watch. It's he's lucky.
Yes.
Anyway,
yes.
So we've got this Sepang round coming up.
Yes.
And the news has been very soft. There's been a lot of these stories where like Danny Pedrosa is shooting for a win, and Dovizioso wants to finish in the top five, and Melandri wants to get some points, and Elias wants to get some points, and you know,
Randy Pugnie wants to just finish the race.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's really nothing interesting going on there. However, there's been, we didn't really cover this last week. And since 2 weeks ago, we've pretty much closed all the doors on all the seats except for the third Kawasaki. Hmm. Because even though it hasn't been made official, the last two seats on the Ducatis are going to be announced at Sepang, and they are... everybody's basically saying it's a done deal with Mika Kallio and Nicola Canepa. So,
however, like you talked with Darren, and have you read anything lately that the mythical fifth Ducati is still a possibility, not a possibility?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right. There is still the possibility of that one, but the thing is, we don't know if even the bike is going to be available.
Right. That one, Kawasaki, I think that one's pretty edgy. That one's yeah.
With the Kawasaki, we do know that the bike is going to be there. Now Aspar just needs to they're having a little fight about whether there's you know, there's a good chance that Nakano might get that ride.
Sure. Bridgestones or Michelins.
What's that?
Which actually that's a story that I don't feel is completely over yet either, though.
What, Nakano or
the tires.
The tires. No, it's not over. In fact, there's a very interesting side effect, I think, that's happening. I think that we may have our first tire specific casualty, which is it's a very unsubstantiated rumor, but about Spies possibly getting Edwards' seat.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, I hadn't heard that one.
I'm swapping so that Edwards goes to World Superbikes, and Spies comes into Tech 3.
Wow.
You know, both Yamaha, very, very close to the factory, the ties on the Tech 3. And, I mean, it sort of makes sense because his big role at Yamaha is the Michelin guy, the guy who is, you know, incredibly familiar with the tires, has been incredibly critical in helping them develop the tires. Even if his results have not been that great this year, he has been instrumental in over the years in getting that Yamaha set up with the Michelins. And everybody gives him credit for that. Even Rossi has said that. So now that, you know, the series is going to Bridgestone, 99% chance is going to that is happening. I mean, they say it's a done deal. You never know, really,
right,
until it happens. But if they're on Bridgestones, then his value drops dramatically. And since he's not doing all that well, and, you know, Yamaha, I mean, some of there's still basically, I mean, I find it a real long shot to see Edwards replaced with Spies, but it's an interesting one.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is actually the first I've heard of it that along those lines. I don't know. I'd be a little. I don't know. I think I'd be a little disappointed to see that happen in that way.
Oh, I'd be very disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, Colin's a personality, and I think that we've talked about this one before, but that goes such a long way. And I don't know.
It's like Pulp Fiction, man. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. They got personality, but you know, his chances of winning the championship are, yeah, pretty much behind him. But
winning the championship, yes. But the thing is, I think he has
being a factor in the championship. That is definitely a fact.
Yeah, and I just don't want him to leave the series without winning a race. And I think he does have it in him.
Yeah, yeah, he does. He's got the talent by far. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, it just seems like it's one thing after another or something like that. Where is he at right now in the actual championship?
In the standings?
Yeah, in the standings.
Well, he's plunging. He's like, you know, John McCain of, oh, no, just, that's unfair.
Well, he was six after Motegi. And unfortunately, I don't have the standings after Malaysia right in front of me.
You mean after Australia?
Sorry, yeah, after Australia. Did I say Motegi? I did. Yeah, I have the standings after Motegi, and he was sixth. I do not have the standings after Australia.
No, he's seventh because, you know, Nicky had a great race, and he didn't.
Right.
So
and there was a very narrow gap.
Probably not going to get caught. By Vermeulen needs 8 points to catch him. It doesn't sound like a lot, but when these guys are fighting for, you know, eighth place or something like that, 8 points is a little more difficult.
Oh, yeah.
To get over somebody.
Two races to go and stuff. Yeah, unless you're finishing on the podium, 8 points is an insurmountable amount.
Yeah, exactly. But Colin was, you know, I think he was fifth at one point. No, he wasn't fifth because Dovizioso was always up there.
I don't know. We'd have to go back through all the things.
No, I don't think so. I think the top five guys have not changed at all. For the most part, no. He may have been there like in the very second race or something like that. But
right.
But I'm pretty sure it wasn't because the one time the Dovizioso actually crashed, I think Edwards also crashed. That was his
well, yeah. Collins didn't get any points at Jerez either. So.
Yeah. So. Yeah,
but
so
whatever. Think, yeah, he the guy's capable of doing very, very well, and you know he's super popular. He sells a lot of Yamahas, I'm sure, to a point in the United States, which is their, you know, second biggest market or biggest market, single market, whatever it is, and all of that sort of thing. So it'd be a shame to see him sort of be kind of shuffled out of the way.
Right.
And it is interesting because. With this whole Spies, I don't know. Do you want to say debacle or whatever it is?
Debacle.
Yeah, and just the way the whole Spies things kind of played out and came about, and the stuff that we hear in the rumor mill, you know, whether or not it's true, of just simply asking for way too much money,
and his mom, And his mom.
Yeah, and his mom. Yeah, bring the mom along. And, you know, hey, Rossi has Uchiyo, Spies has his mom. And so... wow. But... I digress. I should, I probably should cut that part out.
No way. Keep it.
No.
All right. Keep going.
Well, in any case, moving on. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily want to see that. But we're still somewhat digressing that from the whole that yes, and like you said last week, you know, silly season is pretty much done. There's only a couple of small details to be hammered out. And like one of the points you made, that if Sete Germinal were to come back on that Ducati, that would that not be just about the greatest comeback of all time? Yeah. And I think so it'd be awesome.
So cool.
Yes.
And, you know, he doesn't even have to do that well. He doesn't have – I mean, just coming back to MotoGP after two seasons? No. Is it two seasons already? Yeah, it'll be two seasons.
Oh, yeah. Wow. It's two.
Yeah. Because he didn't race it. I mean, yeah, that's right. He basically had that one season in 2006. It was last season, right?
Yeah.
He wasn't there last year.
He didn't. He wasn't.
Oh, my God.
He wasn't in the race in 2007. And,
no, of course not.
He was in 2006. I mean, now I'm getting a little confused.
Time he raced was in 2006.
Right. When he didn't, you know, after the Rossi curse and all of that business.
Yep.
And, but yeah, no, for him to come back and, maybe to a point be a thorn in Rossi's side, maybe not, I don't know, but just in any case.
I think that it would be a very friendly return.
Certainly on the surface it would be.
I mean, I don't know if anybody who hates Sete Germinal, I mean, when he was racing, we had a lot of negative things to say about him because his character seemed to fall apart, under pressure, and so he was a psychologically affected rider. It was quite a phenomenon, I thought. But I don't think anybody really dislikes Sete Germinal. He seems like a nice guy. You know?
One thing that really, really cool about Sete is that the MotoGP news really has a good time with Sete.
That's right. Yeah, they're going to run out of good characters. I guess they can. Melandri's there for another season, so they can pick on him.
But no, that would be – I would love it. I'd love to see him come back. I really would, just because if nothing else, the comeback kid kind of a thing. I think you're right that, you know, the best that he could hope for is to be a bit of a spoiler. But I think we could use some spoilers now.
Yep.
So, other than that, let's see.
There's one other thing I wanted to talk about for a couple of shows now, and now that we have a little bit of time. I'm starting to feel really terrible for Danny Pedrosa. Mm. I think he's become this puppet. I mean, I think a lot of people would agree with that, but it's really getting kind of pathetic. Like, he apologized. First of all, he made all sorts of claims about, you know, wanting to win the Australian GP like all the riders do, right? But then he crashed, and then he apologized to Honda for the crash. Now, we've had this kind of thing from other riders in the past, but I don't know, something about the way that it was done, it just kind of creeped me out. He's so much under control of these characters, you know, like Puig and all the Repsol guys, and because he's apologizing to, you know, it's almost like there's like the Yakuza and they're gonna, you know, cut off his little finger or something like that. You know?
Well, you've got the Spanish oil mafia and the Yakuza.
Yeah, the Yakuza, right? So I don't know. I'm feeling bad for the guy because he's a guy who I don't even know who he is anymore. He's like this, he's becoming kind of like a silent Biaggi, I guess. Where the media just defines who he is, he doesn't have any say.
Yeah. I see what you're saying there and everything else, that the expectations and the build up and the, you know, I mean, pretty much, you know, we've done everything for you sort of thing. So where's our results?
Right. He takes all the blame. He takes all the blame, even if he's not deserving of it.
Right.
And he will. And I think history will show, if he doesn't win a world championship, I think history will remember him as the failure, where that's not necessarily the truth, right?
Right. No.
I mean, I don't think that he has what Stoner has. I don't think he has what Rossi has. I don't think he has what Nicky Hayden has. I don't think he can battle it out head to head with somebody, and that's his biggest weakness. He was like that in the 250s. He just happened to be really freaking fast, and he can be very fast.
Right.
But aside from that, he's a very good racer.
Oh, sure. He's sure. But, you know, there's 17 really good racers and one champion, you know, in MotoGP with an 18-rider grid. And so if somebody's, you know, there's only going to be one champion, and the rest of them are going to be, you know, the guy that didn't get the championship.
Yep.
And every now and then there's anomalies and exceptions to the rule for whatever reason, which, you know, you could argue that Kenny Roberts Jr. was a bit of an anomaly when he won the championship in 2000, right. That sort of thing. Or Alex Gravel in his year. Just the way it is, you know, that they kind of come in at the time when Rossi's not there, when McNewen's not there, what have you. Or when those guys have a particularly bad season.
Yep.
And yeah.
And you know, Colin Edwards went on record saying that now that the series has a single tire and there's going to be less tires available per team, because Bridgestone is simply not going to be able to supply those 37 or 40 tires or whatever they were supplying this year.
Right.
It's going to go down to like 20 something tires per weekend,
which is crazy.
And he says, you know, and guess who's going to get to be the one that decides what kind of tires we're going to be running on? It's going to be Valentino Rossi. So he's like, yeah, you know, Rossi's going to win the next 5 championships.
Yeah.
You know, so these guys, these all these other guys. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be 5, but he, you know, I could see 3 more.
Sorry,
including this one, yeah. I could see 2 more after this. I can totally see that.
Oh, totally. And it also emphasizes a little bit not to go back to the tire war conversation, but the mistake that it is, as far as the overall long-term future of the sport. Yeah, great. It might make next year better, but what's it going to do, you know, for the years following that?
It won't.
I just don't think it will either, to be honest with you.
I think it's it's not even structured right to do what it's supposed to do. In other words, officially they're saying it's for safety and for cost reasons, which are
right, you know, just crap.
Which is crap. But it's, you know, if it was for to make the racing more exciting, that is definitely going to fail, because I think that the 800 formula is what made the racing less exciting. But anyway, we're going down the same path again that we do every time we talk about this.
I totally agree. And I mean, yeah, you can only beat a dead horse so much, but it is.
This one's it's still twitching though, man. It's still twitching.
It is. It needs this to be put out of its misery.
It's one tough horse.
In any case, yeah, I think that's a really good point about Pedrosa, and I think that he's a bit of a victim of his own success and a victim of his own career.
So the thing is, you know, how far back do you go in his career?
Right.
And
when did Pooch Rasputin become?
Before he got into the GPs. I mean, he came out of his school.
Right.
So he was trained by Puig and picked by Puig, you know. Through his entire GP career, he had this guy, this failed racer, basically, who won, I think, one race in his entire career. You know, basically, it's like the father, you know, the failed father who wants his son to succeed where he failed, you know.
The next great Spanish hope.
And on top of that, all the you know, pressure from just the Spanish fans and public who are crazy about motorcycling and want to see a Spanish champion again.
And the thing is, you know, you've got a possibility with Lorenzo.
Yeah.
And as much as my negative comments about him at the end of last year and my sort of almost hopes for a gossip-filled season this year and all that, I like Lorenzo this year.
Yeah. Somebody on, I guess, I think, I'm pretty sure it was right on too, because I haven't been really been paying attention to any other forums that much. I just don't have the time anymore. But somebody was saying something about the Lorenzo flag and how it annoys them. I'm like, you know, that's actually one of the things I really liked, even in the 250s when he planted the flag and like Lorenzo land. It was very original and very funny.
Yeah.
And he, you know, his arrogance last year was actually, now that we get to see it, you know, in hindsight, it was actually very entertaining.
Yeah, I think the hindsight comment right there is perfect. The sucker that he has.
At the time, it was really annoying. Yeah, exactly. Even the sucker started to like grow on me.
Yeah, I agree. Well, one thing that really got him a lot of points in my estimation, and this is relatively recent, was that they were talking about him switching to Bridgestones from Yamahas, you know, or from Michelins, you know, partway through the season and stuff. And it's kind of like, his comment was, well, we have a contract.
Yeah. You know, right. No,
look, and that's it.
Yeah, no, and the humility and the kind of like, well, first of all, we wouldn't even be talking about him if he wasn't unbelievably talented. And
yeah.
And I knew he had really good equipment last year, and you know, he showed some talent last year. I'm messing this up. Yeah, he showed a lot of talent last year, but he also had the best equipment. So it wasn't until this year that he really blew me away. Because you know, for a rookie to start a season off the way he did, it was just unprecedented.
Yes, exactly. And it's a shame that there's so many things that happened to him that you know, kiboshed that whole season. But
well,
yeah.
I mean, in a way, you could say that it's because of the way he
it
all just fits into the same puzzle, right? I mean, he's just so incredibly aggressive and self-assured that he, you know, he overcooked it and hurt himself a few times. But I think that's great. I mean, as long as he doesn't hurt himself permanently, and it helps him grow as a racer, I think it's awesome that he's actually willing to take the risks and to ride that hard with, you know, that much heart.
Right.
He rides with his heart. It's obvious that he does really care about the results. You know, there's some riders out there that are just riding around for a paycheck.
Yes, indeed. Oh yeah, big time. And So actually, real quick, before we go too far into any other stuff, I wanted to mention about the Sepang track. Mm-hmm. What do you think of it?
I'm glad you asked, because I wanted to talk about this. I like it. I like it a lot. There's a couple of sections of it that I think are terrible, like the very, very start, where you have the first two slow corners, obviously designed for cars.
Yeah.
Basically, the front straight and the first two corner sections, but really from that point on, the track is great. It's really cool. It's got the, you know, couple of sweepers, kind of got a nice, very fast S section. Then it has this like double apex, a very long double apex between 7 and 8. You got your hairpin. You got you know, some little bit of elevation changes, off camber corners at 13 and 14, and then you got this, and then it gets lame again, which is basically that's straight, you know, pretty much a hairpin and straight again. But
yeah,
but the thing is that, despite the fact that is really like something that you know, if you look at just how great the racing is at in Australia, it doesn't have anything that like that, where you go straight, really fast, and hit the brakes and, you know, pretty much go down to first or second, probably first, actually, for these guys, and then get back on the gas really, you know, for another straight. You don't see that in Australia, and that's why it's actually a much more flowing, fast motorcycle track. But we've seen some really good racing at this track.
Yeah.
And we have. Even in that corner, we've seen some really good racing. I mean, like, the 2006 race really stands out as one of the best races of that season because of the battle that Rossi and Caparossi had, you know, for the entire race.
Yeah.
And it was decided in that corner.
Yeah, and I mean that's kind of a good way to put it. I've never been a big fan of Sepang. I'm not a fan of any of the Formula One cookie cutter tracks. The one exception being Turkey that they got rid of.
Well, but the thing is, this is not. That's the thing is, I don't think this is a cookie. The track is really ruined by that first section of the first two corners because I think that's the slowest section of track in the whole. In the whole season.
Is it the whole? Yeah, it's certainly up there.
Maybe Estoril chicane is, but these don't have any personality to these two turns. They're just basically two slow flat turns.
Yeah.
Very much for cars. But the rest of the track I think is cool. And it'll be a cool place I think to see a race also.
I'm always a little concerned about going to those races in these countries where you can be, you know, thrown in jail on a whim and stuff like that.
for you know, your chewing gum habits.
Chewing gum, right. Spray painting on cars, whatever, you know. But, I mean, yeah, I would go to Singapore way before I went to Malaysia as far as a trip, you know, that I'm taking. But, but in any case, it's
Politics of the country aside, though, the track, I think, would be a cool place to watch a race.
Right, right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do agree with that. And it is, maybe it's a little bit of my, I'm just not quite enough of a fan that, you know, should I win the lottery and I've got, you know, virtually semi-unlimited funds at my disposal and I decide that I'm going to spend a year or two or whatever following the MotoGP circus around, there's still circuits that I will skip just simply because I have no desire to go to that place.
Really?
And, yeah.
Really? I would go everywhere.
I don't know. I just can't see me taking a pleasure trip to Qatar, honestly.
Oh, God, dude. I would totally go. I would totally go. And not just because I want to take some pictures, but that is so fascinating to me just how different some of these tracks are. And I would love to experience that.
Tracks or countries?
Tracks, countries, the whole thing. I mean,
the thing is, I guess it is a bit lame of me to say because, I mean, realistically speaking, Nicky Hayden, Colin Edwards, John Hopkins, they're Americans going to these circuits and they're not, you know, they pretty much travel relatively incognito, you know, they just get there and they have to go through customs like everybody else and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess they do it. Why shouldn't, you know, I? But, you know.
Well, there's people that are, you know, taking care of a lot of details.
Yeah, there are. But on the other hand, you could also, if you, you know, assuming you'd won the lottery and funding is no object and all of that, you could go with, like, Pole Position Travel or something.
There you go. That's true.
And actually, that probably be what I did. I don't know. Maybe it's a prejudice thing. Maybe it's just, you know, a sort of a thinking of, hey, like, you're not going to get to do that, so you have to pick and choose, you know, because I want to go to a GP in Spain. I want to go to a GP in Italy, you know, and then we'll start working our way down to the, you know, Czechoslovakia would be cool, et cetera.
Australia.
Yes. Probably. Oh, yes. Australia would be awesome. The horror stories of getting in and out of Phillip Island have always sort of, off a little bit.
I definitely have to plug one of the Ride On 2 guys who's in Australia. Has an amazing little story about his ride to and from the Phillip Island round. And so I'll send you a link so you can put it in the show notes. Everybody should go check it out. It's really, really cool. It's a great story. Il Razzo.
Cool. Yeah, no, I'd like to see that. Phillip Island is an awesome track. Oh, man, did you see the highlight reel from Phillip Island with Vermeulen ducking under the seagull?
Oh, no.
It's great. Yeah, it's on the they have a podcast feed of – it's not the After the Flag feed. It's like the official highlight reel feed.
Okay.
And, you can pick it up on their website. You can pick it up on a podcast feed, whatever it is. And it's from qualifying, and I had heard about it and all of that, you know, Vermeulen had a very narrow miss with a seagull. And they just, you know, they've got music going, and they're showing you some cool shots and stuff. And so you're seeing the onboard where it's from inside the fairing, right? So you're looking at his helmet. And all of a sudden, Vermeulen just ducks his head down and then picks it back up. And there's like two frames where you see this bird flying right over his head.
From the onboard shot?
Yeah.
Man, that's awesome. That's awesome.
And I had to go through and do frame by frame to, you know, I kind of knew what it was, but I wanted to double check how you could see it and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah. So a lot of people actually have been also emailing me this link to Boston, the Boston Globe, right? The Boston Globe has a really good story on the Australian Motorcycle Grand Prix. I don't know why it happens to be there, but they have some incredible photos, including one of Bautista almost hitting a seagull.
Yeah, apparently they're all over the place. You know, shocking, since it's right next to the ocean. Which I would take care of the seagull problem the day before with a shotgun. And Jesus. You know, I don't like seagulls. But, the Boston Globe, like a Boston newspaper?
Yeah.
Wow.
Their website. I know. It's so weird.
That is weird.
It's very, very weird.
Yeah. But no, it's a cool shot. And who was it that nailed a seagull at Phillip Island not too long ago? And then
Troy Corser.
Yeah.
It also happened
right around the same time, AMA, at VIR, I think somebody hit a seagull. And yeah, it's like, this cannot be a good thing. You know, you're talking a fairly good sized bird, you know, hitting you on a motorcycle when you're doing 180 miles an hour or more.
Right.
Yeah, man. So just like it's sucking it into a jet engine. But, you know, meow, there it goes out the back. But I digress. So, I'm looking forward to it. And we also have we're finishing up real quick with the season,
yeah,
which is always sad. But, you know, we're going to Valencia for the final round of MotoGP only 1 week after.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, because they went all the way into November last year. And this year they're finishing up in October. And you only have the 1 week lag and all of that business. And that's, then we have the long, you know, 4 or 5 month haul until the season starts up again. So a bit sad.
Yeah. The series is changing. So
it has changed over time. Even as long as I've been a fan, and certainly as long as you've been a fan, but
This is a different kind of change, and
I agree. Some of the changes have been for the better, some have been for the worse, et cetera, et cetera. We are definitely getting, I think, more of a universal access to it. Certainly, 10 years ago in the United States, you couldn't watch MotoGP.
Well, you could, but
10 years ago.
Yeah, they were showing on Speed or whatever Speed was called.
Was Speed around even? I thought Speed started later than 10 years ago. But right around that time that finally, you know, Speed came up, you know. So it wasn't
that motorcycle racing coverage actually was better. I seem to remember being able to catch the races. Not live, but it wasn't that hard.
Not before Speed, though.
Before Speed, yeah.
On what? What channel?
The 90s. I don't remember. I just remember being able to sit down and watch motorcycle racing on TV.
Wow,
the guy we should ask is Jim Race, because I think he even has VHS tapes of all that stuff.
Wow, VHS tapes. I don't have a VHS player anymore. Jim Race has 8 tracks of the commentary.
Well, he's been watching that sport all his life, so.
Yeah, that's cool. But, wow, I didn't know that, actually. That's kind of news to me. And I still mourn the loss of the true Speed Vision, but it's gone. Get over it. And yeah, I don't know. Now I'm getting all maudlin.
I'm going to need to wrap it up because my nose is starting to run and it's going to ruin.
It's always a good reason. We don't want to hear you snorkeling. So yeah.
So, but I did want to mention something. I don't know if you realize, but this is show 150.
It is.
It's a milestone.
It's a long time, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I think back and as far as starting the podcast and you know. Those first shows were awful way back when, 2005 and all of that. But we've been doing, you and I have been doing the show together for quite a long time, too. So yeah, that's good stuff. Yeah.
Yep. It's cool for me because I was a big fan of the show, and then I got to do it with you, which is really interesting.
It's been a lot of fun, and 150 is a bit of a milestone, I suppose. I don't know. I hear some, you know, there's other shows that come out more frequently or more regularly or what have you, but it's still, it is, yeah. It's been a long, cool run, and I've made a lot of friends.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. I met a lot of people, got a lot of cool opportunities that would never have come up except for the show. So that's a very, very cool thing. So, all right, Jules, congratulations. Number 150. Cool.
Yay. You too, man.
Yeah, thanks.
You more than me, for sure. So, so Pang is just a reminder that if you're in the U.S., that check your times if you're watching the race live on MotoGP, because most likely you'll be watching it Saturday night.
The Far Eastern races are always going to be a little bit strange as far as the time schedule is concerned and all of that. So make sure that if you want to watch it on MotoGP.com or some other sort of live venue, that you make sure that it's the correct time.
Yep. And that's it.
Yeah, I think, let's call it a short one today. Why don't we come back next week and we'll talk about what happened at Sepang, and we'll have a little Valencia preview, because Valencia is one of the big, crazy rounds of this series, and which is one of the ones I want to go to. I'm any of the three in Spain would be great. I think Jerez would be my first choice, but...
For atmosphere, definitely.
Yes, for atmosphere. I mean, you got to figure that there's some reason or another why you're going to a race. And let's face facts, when you're actually at the race, your view of the race is typically not as good as what you're going to see on TV.
So it's all about the atmosphere.
Exactly. It's all about the atmosphere. Exactly. Yep. And I mean, that's what made Indy so enjoyable. I mean, the weather sucked. And, even the racing was, always shortened or canceled or whatever because of the weather. But we had a great time, because you're there. And the same sort of thing could be said of any of the races there. And it was fun. It was fun going back now, waxing all nostalgic and stuff about the 150th episode and this and that and the other. When we first talked to Liam way back when, and he had just gone to the 2005 round of China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As a fan, this is before Liam Schubert was working in MotoGP, so now he's a little bit jaded because he's been working there in the circus and all of that. But, this is when he went as a fan, and to talk to him and hear about, going then, it was like, that was a neat, neat experience. And it sounded like, actually sounded like a lot of fun. So,
yeah.
All right. Why don't we call it a short one today? And we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, man.
All right.
Take care, everyone. Ciao.
So there you go. That was the call with Jules. Hope you enjoyed it. Jules and I had a good time doing that call, and we always have a good time talking to each other. That link that he mentioned about the Boston Globe, those pictures, you've got to see this if you haven't seen this stuff on the internet for a couple of reasons. One, the pictures that they chose are really good. This is an excellent collection of photos. I mean, there's excellent photos from every round of the MotoGP series, but these guys went through and they're really some good ones. Some better pictures that I've seen overall, by and large, lately of MotoGP action. And the other thing that's, I think, even almost a little more interesting is the fact that they ran it at all. And you just sort of have to check it out, especially if you're in the United States. You know, United States newspaper running this story about a race that's in Australia and on all of that. And some of the comments and things like that were, you know, the usual mix of complete dross with some good stuff. And I think it was it's worth seeing. So check that one out. That link is up there. And we also have the link for the Ride On 2 thread that Joel's talking about. And I think that is about it. Other than that, we will talk to you next week. Don't forget, Sepang is coming up here very, very shortly. And it's going to be a good one. So hopefully you hear the show in time to make sure that you hear the get the time change schedule going on for you there. And here I am blathering on. Yeah, so until next week, we will talk to you later and have a good week. Have a good race. Keep the shiny side up if you're getting any winter riding in, and we'll talk to you then. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I am solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorner Sports SL, and the MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorner Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.